When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Yeah, Friday. What's up? Welcome in. We're Grant and Danny, and you are listening live to The Fan. It's December 20th, 2024, a football Friday, and we are out and about our field trip series today live from the Crystal City Sports Pub. One of my favorite restaurants and bars in the area. Come out here all the time to watch games. It's very cool to broadcast from here for the first time that I've ever been out here. I told you this, Danny. When I was a young guy going to XM Radio many, many, many years ago to do a kids sports show, my dad used to have to drive me. And on the way home, he'd ask where I wanted to stop.
What'd you tell him?
We would come into the Crystal City Sports Pub to eat some burgers and watch some sport on TV. And we are here today doing the show. So very cool moment for me and excited to have the show out here today. So come on by. We're going to be here from 2 to 6:30 broadcasting ahead of Commanders Eagles on Sunday and getting ready for a huge weekend of pigskin both in college and the NFL.
So I've got a whole slew of things to talk about, but you're not kidding about TVs, by the way. You can't turn your head without seeing a dozen TVs. Crystal City Sports Pub knows what they're about, and they're about sports on television. That's number one. Number two, if I could say this at the risk of coming across a certain way, usually if there's one of us dressed up, it's old Fannie Mouye, right? Putting on the collared shirt or the little blazer or whatever it is. Not the case today. Got a regular old Nats t-shirt on. My pal Grant Harrison Paulson dressed not quite to the tens but to the nines. Looks very, very sharp if I can say
that. Well, I wouldn't say I'm dressed up.
You're dressed nicely.
This is above radio fare. Typically, the people on the 106.7 The Fan YouTube page that are watching us live right now will
see. It's not the Caps hoodie that you wear.
No,
you know it's nice.
It's a button-down shirt with a little bit of a jacket.
A little jacket.
Not a sports jacket, but just a little coat, you know, pocketed coat. I am going to be doing the Altcast tonight. In fact, I have to get out of here at about 6, so you're going to be solo for the final half hour or so.
I will do it.
From the show, from the Crystal City Sports Pub. But, I got to get over to MGM National Harbor. That's where we're going to be doing our show from tonight. The Caps are in action. I will be on Monumental Sports myself, Tariq El-Bashir, Tony P in D.C., a social media
star. You and Tariq, that's awesome.
Going to be live on the Monumental Altcast. So check us out tonight if you want to do that. Real quick on the Caps.
Please.
Spencer Carberry told the media this morning that Alex Ovechkin will not return before the Christmas holiday break. So there was actually some thought after tonight's game, they play again Sunday, Monday, that maybe he would play in one of those two games. That was kind of what everyone was starting to think based on him traveling with the team. But Carberry kind of said, no, that's not happening. And I'm fine with that.
Me too, yeah.
You might as well. You got a break coming up. It's almost like bringing a player back from injury right before a bye week.
Mm-hmm.
Let's give him a little extra time. Let's get him to 100%.
Yeah, no reason to, right?
And let's make sure he is ready to finish the season strong, especially because they played so well without him. I was just looking at the power rankings for ESPN that they released today. They've got the Caps the number one team in the National Hockey League. Not like the number one in the Metro, the number one team in the entire NHL. So it's not like they're desperately army crawling through the abyss to try to get back to 500 or something, and they need Ovi as a reinforcement.
Yeah, whether they are the number one team or not, that's not even the point. The point is they're very good, and this player's has a lot of tread on the a lot of mileage over the years. There's no reason to rush anybody back, let alone Ovechkin, right? So he maybe could play tonight, maybe could play or the next week, but we talk about he won't be back for Christmas. I think it's only a couple of games, right? I mean, as Christmas is 5 days away at this point, which is crazy how quick that's come up. But yeah, this makes sense to me. No issue there. The what's lost in the sauce also is this is remarkable. I hate to even talk about it this way, it's a skill, but the fact that he's healed enough to even be traveling with the team, skating around, doing what he's already done is ridiculous. I've talked about this, a very dear friend of mine, one of my best buddies in the world, was a college football player, did this in November of his junior year, was able to come back for the final game of his senior year, and could only do special teams. And they did it to as a nice courtesy. It's you never get to play football again. You can cover kickoffs as long as we're up by or down by more than 20. This is ridiculous. He's superhuman. Oh, my goodness.
It's been a great day for the Paulsons. I took the kids to go see Santa today.
Oh, that's awesome.
Now, the youngest was not a big fan of the big fella. There were tears shed.
Yeah.
She's a baby. She doesn't really know what she doesn't know yet.
Right.
She just knows that mom
Stranger.
And dad handed it over to a bearded gentleman. No,
yeah.
It happens to be the greatest bearded gentleman in all the land. It's a guy that's going to bring her a lot of presents in a few days, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
But, she wasn't in on it. So we did get one really good family photo. We were all sitting there. She was smiling. Then when we got out of the picture for the kid photo,
yep.
She did not have it. But the other two, the 5-year-old and now the 4-year-old as of this week, they had a great time with Santa. They told Santa what they wanted. They audibled, by the way, based on the list that were put together a couple weeks ago, which I found very interesting.
That is intriguing.
They told Santa some things that I didn't know they wanted.
That's a wrench in the gears there.
It is December 20th, so hopefully Santa's got some time to make some
too
moves.
Too late to change your list.
But, so that was interesting, nonetheless. But we had a very good time. And I should let you know, Danny.
Yep.
I know that your big issue with taking the kids to see Santa is you're afraid of the lines. Not one person in line.
Wow.
We walked straight
That's amazing.
Up. Didn't have an appointment. We just walked into the mall. We walked right up to the front. They handed us a little piece of paper for what pictures we wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And we walked, didn't even break stride, right up to Santa. And he had him sit right there on the bench.
That sounds great. Good for you guys.
So I report back to you to let you know it is time to get the Ruyas to see Santa.
No.
There is no line.
Yeah, that's only a fraction of the issue. When we go, there'd be a line. I can't explain why, but I just know it. It's also the fact that my kids don't want to do it. So it's one of those such a low return for a thing that's really for the parents, whereas I'd just rather not have the hassle. So anyway, yeah, that's good for you guys. I'm glad that it's for some people. That's great. There's a whole bunch of things that people do that they're welcome to do that I have no interest in, and I'm sure, vice versa. And that is on one of those kind of lists right there where it sounds like it's for a lot of folks. It is not for us. My wife doesn't do it either. You know what I mean? Nobody does it because it's too much of a deal.
We got college football tonight. The first ever college football playoff game going to kick off in the snow. Now, I don't think there's going to be any snow falling during the game, it doesn't sound like. But Indiana, Notre Dame, the last picture I saw of the playing surface was inches of snow.
That's
covering
so
it.
Cool. I love it.
So it's going to be, I think, a cold weather, certainly snow-induced game, even if the snow is not falling. But we're going to get the playoff started tonight.
Toby. For the right to get smashed by Georgia?
Pretty much.
I think, yeah.
Although Georgia not going to have their quarterback, it doesn't sound like.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
So who knows? Maybe you can get on a little heater here and give Georgia some problems. But Toby was doing updates. Actually, we were in the chat, texted me, and he's like, who do you want to win this game? I was thinking about it. Normally, I would always be for the underdog, and I'm a huge believer in the coaching staff in Indiana. I'm a big JMU supporter because my wife went there.
Mm-hmm.
They've got JMU's former head coach and a bevy of transfers.
Like a bunch of JMU Dukes.
So as a Duke through marriage, I would probably be rooting for Kurt Cignetti in Indiana, but I kind of want to see Notre Dame go on a run. It's been so long since they've played deep. The last couple of times they've been in the national championship conversation, they've gotten completely worked over.
Just smashed, yeah.
So I don't think I can lose tonight. Indiana wins, I could be happy. I'll probably be pulling for Notre Dame. But it's nice to not have a team you're rooting against, I will say.
Yeah, I don't have any visceral reaction here. No hatred either way. My only sort of logical chain here is the same complaints I have about Maryland fans, where there's this delusional subgroup where it's like, football team's different. Not different. Same. You beat a few bad teams. You beat Maryland Eastern Shore. You might get Towson or like some 1AA team. When it's time to play the real boys, you'll get your butts kicked. Please stop pretending it's anything other than that. For Notre Dame, it's the same. It's although it's a higher level where, you know, they play Stanford and they might eke out Navy. But there's this pretend that, like, they're one of the big boys. They're a national power. And they're not. They're overranked every single year until they lose in a baffling, inexplicable game to them, but not to the rest of us, because everyone knows they're probably about the 22nd or 23rd best team in the country. But then whenever they play somebody that's decent, they get smashed and they don't really belong. They're athletes short. So I kind of root for them to lose so there's never any delusional ammo for the Notre Dame fans. But that's not – I don't root very hard. Does that make sense? Like, that's my only slight lean, so let's go Hoosiers, I guess. But I don't really care.
I think generally, too – although I don't know, if you're a JMU fan, are you salty that Cignetti packed up shop and left and took a bunch
be.
Of really? So you'd probably yeah. not root for the guy that ran your program and a lot of the players that you love,
yeah,
but against them because they left and they're doing it somewhere else.
He took a lot of JMU Dukes with him.
Oh,
so I'd be irritated if I'm a JMU Dukes fan.
Game tonight kicks off at about 8 o'clock. So I'll be able to check out the end of it after our altcast over at the MGM Sportsbook over in National Harbor, which will be cool. But the show today, Football Friday, is a build-up, too. And one of the things we'll be celebrating is listeners come out, get off work, come by today at the Crystal City Sports Pub. Commanders-Eagles. The first time we saw this matchup, Washington gave Philly all they could handle for three quarters. And I think people forget that there was a fourth down decision in the fourth quarter where instead of kicking a field goal to take the lead, Dan Quinn goes for a fourth and two. I had no problem with the decision. I love going for those fourth downs, and they didn't get it. It was one of the couple of times all year long, literally, that they haven't gotten fourth downs.
And remember, the play just everything looked weird on the like the snap. Either Jaden Daniels wasn't ready for it, or it was early, and you know a couple guys didn't move, and Carter blew it up, and the whole thing was just weird.
But that play changed the entire
game.
Yes,
it did.
Eagles take over possession. They go score. They extend their lead at that point to 19-10. Made it a two-possession game. They would get the ball back and score another touchdown after a Jaden Daniels interception. Probably his worst pick of the year and maybe his worst game of the year. And Washington was down 16 with about 4 minutes, 40 seconds to play.
Yep.
But the game was really not that lopsided. They did a lot of things well enough to win for about 48 to 50 minutes. And they just couldn't finish. And so what will be fascinating now at home, getting another crack at the Eagles, a full week to prepare. Last time was a short week after a tough loss to a physical Steelers team. How different do things look? You've now got Marshawn Lattimore at cornerback, which could be a big boost to the secondary. Might allow you to commit some more bodies up front to trying to slow down Saquon Barkley. I think they are just better equipped to play Philly this time around than they were last time.
Defensively, yes. Offensively, no. To me. And the offense really struggled.
That's true. They've lost weapons since that game.
Yeah, no Austin Ekeler, I think, is an underrated storyline here. Like, against great defenses, that's the time you really need somebody like that. The fact they didn't have another answer with so much attention paid to McLaurin, or he was isolated, whatever you want to call it, the fact they didn't have a good, viable second option in the receiver game, the pass game. No Zach Ertz in all likelihood, although, you know, still some chance, I guess, maybe that he plays. I haven't seen an update today about his status, but you would think he might miss that. So, to me, they're ill-equipped to deal with a defense that, frankly, shoved it on them for most of that game, where they really, really scuffled there. Just, you know, not being able to take advantage while Philly's offense was finding its footing. I mean, you look at Philly's drive log, right, really through the entire first half, missed field goal, which was big, punt, punt, missed field goal again, but those are stops for Washington is coming up big, and a punt, that's got to be 17-0. That's got to be 20-0. That's got to be when you catch them, unaware, standing eight count in the ring. Then maybe you could play even the rest of the way, or even Philly could have an advantage. That's how you win the game. I don't know that they can do that this week. I mean, you're going to see kind of throughout the show, I'm just sort of going, okay, well, what about this direction? And then I feel like there's a shutoff here from Philadelphia. I just think the Eagles are too good, and they're better now than even when they played the first time. I know there have been moments where they've played with their food and had teams that are inferior to Washington in the game. Probably should have lost to Carolina. You look at some of the other matchups where you're going, why aren't you dominating this team the way Washington has, quite frankly? But this Eagles team is really, really good.
I think they're coming off of maybe their signature win.
Against Pittsburgh?
Yeah, two touchdowns, 27-13 over the Steelers. Otherwise, their recent wins were by 6-5. And as you said, one of those games, if the Panthers can catch a pass at the goal line, the Eagles lose.
They lose.
And they're 11-3, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't view them as some team that can't be beaten. A lot of how I look at games and make predictions is based on the quarterback position. And Jalen Hurts is just playing okay. He has not been great. And because of that, I think Philly keeps teams in games. Their offense, when it's been dynamic or prolific, is via the running game. You know, when they scored 37 against the Rams, as an example, they finally broke out. Go back and look at that game. I remember watching it. Saquon Barkley ran for 255 yards and two touchdowns. Jalen Hurts threw for 170 that game. You know, a couple of weeks ago, he threw for 100 yards in a win. Now, this past week against Pittsburgh was the best he's looked, and maybe they got some things going in their passing game. But A.J. Brown left with an injury, came back in. You mentioned his status is up in the air. He did say about 30 minutes ago
that he's playing,
that he plans on playing.
Isn't that nice? Good. Thanks. Thank you.
Now, that was him. That wasn't the training staff, but he says he's going to go. Now, if I was A.J. Brown and I looked at my box scores against Washington, I'd probably want to play too.
I'd go.
Because he's had some monster games.
Yeah.
But if he's not right, if he plays, isn't 100%, and his day ends quicker, all of a sudden I think that's a game changer, because maybe you can then have Marshawn Lattimore travel with Devontae Smith when he's not in the slot, you know, when they put him on the outside. You can have him try to take half a field away, and now I've got the ability to really stuff the box against Saquon Barkley. But any kind of delusions of grandeur, any kind of dreams of maybe A.J. Brown won't go, he put those to a dashing halt here just a bit ago by saying he's probably going to play. But I think it will be a pretty close game. I don't view it as lopsided a matchup. I get what you're saying, that offensively, not having Eckler, who led Washington with 8 catches and about 90 yards at the link several weeks back, is a big deal. Not having Noah Brown stings. But they've been able to not make their injuries death sentences so far, based on running Jaden Daniels more, based on involving other receivers in the passing game, in the screen game. You saw a lot more out of Deami Brown, Olamide Zaccheaus, Jamison Crowder being back. So the key to me is holding the Eagles into the low to mid-20s. That's the whole game. Mm-hmm. I don't think they have the firepower, to your point, to score like 34. But if they could get to 27, could you win a 27-23 game where you turn Philly over a couple times? To me, that's the path.
That's the path. That's what it is, right? It's again, the games that Philly has lost, you got to go a long way, months and months and months ago, but that's pretty much how it happened.
You got to do one of those graphics, like how much did milk cost?
Yeah.
What was the number one song in America at
price
that time?
Price per gallon.
I mean, it really, like, they have gotten really comfortable not losing football games.
Yeah, it has been a long time. And one of those two that they lost, Saquon Barkley dropped the ball that he would catch 1,000 times out of 1,000, but he didn't catch it the 1,001th time or 1,001st time, and they lost. So
their last loss, just looking at it, September 29th against the Tampa Bay Bucks in week 4.
To Tampa.
They fell to 2-2 at that time. They could have easily been 1-3, by the way, because they lucked out against the Saints. They also won, lost a game they could have won in there, too.
Yep.
But from that point forward, out of their bye, they're number one in almost every defensive category. That's why they're the best defense in the league.
Yeah, they're tough to deal with. I mean, to me, this offense is this sleeping giant where you've seen him in moments really be excellent. Like against the Rams, I go, wow. I don't know what you're supposed to do. You know what I mean? Like, where they are just up and down the field, every option's available. They got a counter to your counter to your counter to your counter. The talent's everywhere, right? The bookend receivers are so good. Saquon Barkley is a menace. And if you get those things and you cover everybody somehow, Jalen Hurts on the scramble is really good. Again, it's he's not as prolific in terms of yards per carry because of the number of third and shorts or fourth and shorts that are automatic with that stupid tush push thing that they should ban immediately. But he's so effective as a kind of under-control type scrambler. The passing totals, you're 100% right, are not prolific. I don't think he's got a 300-yard passing day, maybe one or two over the course of this season. He mostly lives around, 190 to 205, somewhere in there. But to me, this offense is so complete that They've got so many different ways to beat you that it's a tough task for any defense. That's why they're top 10 in points scored this year.
Grant and Danny live from the Crystal City Sports Pub today. It's a Friday field trip. We're going to be out here until 6:30. So as you get out of the office, you can play a little hooky, come on down, watch the show, get yourself some lunch. It's an outstanding sports bar I've been coming to for a long, long time over in Crystal City. We do have Trey Wingo, formerly of ESPN, on the program at 3 o'clock today. John McMullen, who covers the Eagles, will stop in to scout the opponent. At 5 o'clock, we'll get the lowdown on who's in and who's out for Philly. The health for Washington is actually pretty good this week compared to recent weeks. John Allen's the only player they've ruled out. We didn't even think was going to play again this season. Sounds like he could be back for the Atlanta game maybe next week. But let's do this next. We'll answer this question, and we can get some answers from you guys on the phones at 800-636-1067. The Commanders beat the Eagles if. What would need to happen? Fill in that blank. For Washington to upset maybe the best team in the NFC, Philly, at home this weekend, what do they got to do? 800-636-1067. You're listening to Grant and Danny from the Crystal City Sports Pub on The Fan. Welcome back to the Crystal City Sports Pub. We're Grant and Danny. You are listening live to The Fan. I got to shout out Kelly, one of our listeners out here, who we just heard. He does some Grant and Danny press conferences.
I love it.
With his dad, where he blitzes the East at night. He goes around the horn and interviews or pretends to be a player. He's doing the kind of stuff I was
so
doing when I was a little guy.
Yeah,
and to see him rocking a Commanders hat with an Alf jersey, it gives you a little hope that this fan base chance to keep it going.
Yeah, I mean, he's already a pretty strong broadcaster, right? He's got good experience doing the press conferences and
everything
like that. I tried to explain to him, like, my bit back in the day was I had a Nerf hoop in the upstairs hallway at my parents' house. I would play out full Bullets games. The Bullets would have a great record, by the way, at the end of the season. I'd allow them to drop a game or two.
Did they ever win 50 games in the fake world?
They did. They won 78 games a year on average, right? Like Jeff Rulin would go for triple doubles. Anyway, I would conduct all these different games, and then I'd interview, quote-unquote, the player of the game, and I kept all the stats for the season, like the field goal percentage of these guys. Like Jeff Malone, one year, I think, shot 88%. Just like unrealistic numbers.
Just but it was filling fun it up.
Yeah, he couldn't miss from the baseline. And with his knee braces.
Come on out to the Crystal City Sports Pub. We will be here as a show until 6:30 talking Commanders, Eagles, and getting you ready. Believe it or not, it should not be this way, but it is. At risk of being the guy who just talks about how fast time goes by as an old person, that's now my new thing. It's week 16.
Week 16.
There's only two more weeks after this of the NFL regular season. Now, the good news this time around is it looks like Washington's going to get into the playoffs, and so there will be an extra bonus game this year as the Commanders may try to end a drought that goes back to 2005.
Which is fine.
Their last playoff win. But the question for you guys right now, Commanders-Eagles on Sunday, what has to happen for them to win this football game? They beat the Eagles if. Fill in that blank at 800-636-1067. Let's go to Ryan in Warrington on Grant and Danny to get it popping. What's up, Ryan? How are you?
Hey, guys. How y'all doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Got it, buddy.
I think what we need is Cliff to not be conservative and dig into his bag of tricks in that playbook and just unleash it. Let Jaden do what Jaden does. Let Terry do what Terry does and B-Rob. But we know Witt's going to fire up the defense, and it's iffy on what that defense will do. If either coordinator just dials it up and let these boys run wild, I think we got a good chance.
Appreciate you, buddy. Now, Kingsbury was the most critical of himself that he has been all season yesterday about his game plan and the play calling, not just the plan he put together, but the in-game play calling at the podium yesterday referencing the Eagles game. I think it sounded to me like, and we can play the clip if Darius grabs it. He's got it, so let's play this. I'll react to it in a second. But this was Kingsbury yesterday.
Yeah, I think the ability to learn from what we did the first time we played him on a short week. I mentioned this before, but I had way too much in, and I felt like we played tentative. I didn't call a very good game. So now to have the full week process and just see how they played this first time, try to make the proper adjustments, and then see how far we've come since then. I think that's going to be the exciting part. But they've done a tremendous job, Coach Fangio, defensively. I mean, the improvements they made from last year and just watching them week to week, critical moments, the way they're playing. It's been impressive to see the job he's done. It'll be a huge challenge, but I think we're a different team, they're a different team, and hopefully we can play at a lot higher level than we did the first time.
So what I find compelling about that is it sounds to me like his take is normally on a short week Thursday game where you only have Monday and Tuesday, basically, you're traveling. And then Wednesday, you're meeting at the hotel, getting ready to play the next night. Normally, you pare things down. You do less on offense. He felt like maybe he added too much or the game plan was a little too beefy. So that's interesting, but it didn't look like that on the field. Like, I don't remember them running anything overly exotic. There weren't really trick plays as part of what they tried to do. They basically ran the same stuff, and it worked a lot less. So that's why I'm interested in what he had to say, but I don't remember that kind of meeting my eyeballs on what I saw in the game.
Yeah, so if you would ask me for my notes post-game, it would have been, man, they tried to make it too complicated, or man, they tried to get too sophisticated. It looked like they can't even get started. It looked like there's nothing available, and they can't get it to Terry. They can't, you know, get the run game going, et cetera, and that's really my thesis here for what has to happen for them to win the football game. You look at their wins, for the most part, it's, I talked about this the other day, it's first down, and a lot of time that's runs. But, you know, in that Philly game to start it, they went to Austin Ekeler on a little swing pass. You look at that Cincinnati game where their offense was prolific. It was Ekeler early. You need to be really, really, really good on first down, and that kind of translates in general. I usually can't stand when, you know, the Neanderthals that love football just want to yell about establish the run as if it's the only formula. But for this team, they've got to run the ball well. It's not about establishing anything. It's about being effective. You need to effectively run the ball. When they don't, you look at some of the point totals, the yardage totals, like New Orleans against Dallas, et cetera. They ended up with respectable rushing totals, but Jaden Daniels masked that. Running backs in those kinds of games were pretty much neutral or neutralized, ineffective. That can't happen against Philadelphia, who's really good at stopping it. You've got to find a way early to be able to run the ball or be good on first down, and I think that's, you know, most likely to be running. And then their defense, talking about Vic Fangio and company in Philadelphia, they're designed to prevent your big play. We challenge you to be patient and matriculate 10, 11, 12 plays down the field. You need a big play somehow. Whether that's a catch and run, whether it's something over the top, I don't know how much is available there, but you've got to have a couple of big chunks to go with some early down effectiveness.
800-636-1067. You want to jump in? Let us know what you think Washington's got to do to beat the Eagles. Just to give some, backup to what you're talking about on first and 10. So they actually threw the ball on their first three first and 10s against the Eagles, oddly enough. But as the game went on, you know, first and 10, Jaden sacked for minus four behind the stick, second and 14. First and 10 from the 27, another throw. So there was obviously a plan.
Yeah.
I'll be curious to see if Kingsbury does the same thing. And they really didn't call a run play on a first down, it doesn't look like, until their sixth first and 10 of the game, basically. But eventually, after really, really heavy first and 10s, Robinson up the middle for two, second and 8. You know, it doesn't really get you where you want to be. Their next first and 10, they got 8. Those are the series where they had some success. But when you're going minus 1, 0, second and 8, second and long, now you're an incompletion away from third and a mile. And that's been the key all season long for this offense is third and not obvious passing.
Yep.
When you're dropping guys into the secondary, when you know Jaden Daniels is going to throw it, you can spy him, which the Eagles did as well as any team has done with linebackers, and you can make it a point to defend differently so that he can't leave the pocket and scramble. If it's third and short, you got to play Brian Robinson. You got to respect that read option. And it just looked very, very different all year when they've gotten to third and 3 or less. And that's not just a Commander's point. That's every team, obviously.
Sure.
But it's especially the case with a young quarterback that's a little bit light in terms of the weaponry on the outside and how helpful those guys are going to be at winning, you know, one-on-one matchups. My answer to our question, though, in terms of for them to win, what has to happen? I think they have to keep Saquon Barkley in check. I think they've got to find a way to stop the run. And that's the whole matchup here. It's a top five rushing team in the Eagles. Barkley could be on his way to an all-time single-season rushing record if he can chase down Eric Dickerson. And it's a bottom five run-stopping defense statistically this year in Washington. John Allen's not coming through that door. So it's got to be Johnny Newton and Sheldon Day and Daron Payne and some of the ends that they move over to help out. But they've got to do a better job than they did last time when they caved in and Barkley went for about a buck 50.
Because that, that just to me feels like a matter of time playing against Philadelphia. They're gonna stay with who they are. They're gonna keep trying to crash that wave against the shore. And they did a good job, I thought, by and large, for, you know, what do you want to call it? 2.5 quarters, 3 quarters, whatever. But then, you know, Barkley got going, and then that was it. A couple of those long runs, it looked like the game, you know, was a completely different one there down the stretches, whether Washington got tired or Philly found something. I don't know the answer, but doing that for 4 quarters is hard. I mean, you've seen them a few times, first half shutouts or first half dominance, then all of a sudden, you know, late in the game, they can't stop anybody. See Chicago, see New Orleans, see Philadelphia. They've had a few of those games.
There's such a big difference, though, between, like, the games where he hits home runs and the games where he really earns 110.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if he goes 23 carries for 107 and his long is 13, there's a matriculation that has to happen where it's longer drives, it's more plays, mm-hmm. and eventually Hurts misses a throw. Or eventually maybe they drop a pass or whatever.
You get a hole, you get a sack.
You just can't let it be easy, mm-hmm. which is what happened inevitably against Washington. Last week, I know they beat Pittsburgh. But that's the formula to me, is he really, I won't say struggled because that's not true, but he didn't have a game the likes of which he's been having all season long.
Yeah, he was on pace to set the rushing record. He didn't have that last week.
No. I mean, the Steelers, and they lost because they gave up too many plays in the passing game, but I think they will take that. It was 19 carries for 65 yards.
Yep.
And if you take his one long 20-plus yarder out of the equation, it was 18 carries for like 45 yards. Can't do better than that. And it's one of the reasons why the Eagles, with about 7 minutes to go in the third quarter, had 17 points. That's where you want to be with this offense. You will take your chances that way. If you want to tell us how you think Washington beats Philly, you can do that. 800-636-1067. We'll also look at the other games around the NFL. There are some really good ones in Week 16. We'll give you some of our favorite matchups on Sunday's slate. We are live at the Crystal City Sports Pub. You're listening to Grant and Danny on The Fan. Live from the Crystal City Sports Pub, Grant and Danny coming your way on 106.7 The Fan. A few days before the holiday, it's the Friday, the last Friday before Christmas. There's no reason you can't get out of the office and come kick it with your pals. We're going to be watching games. There's a bowl game going on. In fact, I'm watching Ohio put one on Jackson State right now, it looks like. But come on out. Enjoy yourself. Watch some college football with us. Have lunch. We'll be here until 6:30. It's our Friday field trip.
This place rules. Crystal City Sports Pub. It's, dare I say, iconic. Is that okay to say?
I think you can say that. It is. Once you've been around in the restaurant game as like a sports bar that people have been going to for decades, I think it's a legendary spot.
Yeah, it's gotten to that point, right? I mean, it's to me, it was a contemporary of some of the spots that I used to go decades ago that are no more, right? So, like, very much still here. Very much still going incredibly strong. This place is so fun. I love it.
We'll get into some of our favorite matchups of the weekend in the NFL, but the big question for you guys on a Football Friday is, what do the Commanders have to do to beat the Eagles? Why might this be different? Elijah is in D.C., wants to join us on Grant and Danny Live on The Fan. What's up, Elijah?
What's going on, fellas?
Hey, buddy.
I think it's going to be long drives for the offense. One, with Saquon and just how they want to move, you're going to have to protect your defense, right? So we don't want to have them gassed out. We saw them do a good job, but the offense was struggling. They're going to have to grow. They're going to have to develop with Terry McLaurin moving across the board. I think that challenges them defensively. So they're just going to have to get creative, and they're going to both units are going to have to play for each other in a sense. So I'm thinking long drive, even if you have to convert on fourth and one, you know, certain things, they're going to have to be aggressive. Yeah. So I'm thinking you get early points, play good defense, and then you slow that sucker down. And, and I think we just bleed them. And then once you get, I think Lattimore is going to most likely get more work in that situation. So you're going to start playing into our hands if we got Lattimore for this situation. You know, if they're going to say, hey, they're going to have to start throwing the ball. Just from having Lattimore, we saw Sanders still get an interception because defensively you could communicate. You know, if you got one area of the field locked down, the combinations that are now going to be on the opposite side of the field, you can start saying they can only hit us with this, that,
right,
or the third because this situation is on the left. So what happened? Sandersville is now able to make certain decisions. You can play more aggressively. You can truly see who's on your defense when you have a blue chip player. So I'm so glad that they was able to do this. And I know the team is excited that he's here and, other team, because it's not always about one guy, but it's like when you can add a guy to a unit that's bubbling or you can see that them growing, it can only be good. So I think they're trending up, and they just need to protect each other and do a good job.
Appreciate you, buddy.
Good call, buddy.
I think there's a lot of good points there. The one thing I want to add to what Elijah said is, you got to go on drives, especially early in the game. Your offense needs to stay on the field so that you don't wear down as the game goes on. They could not do that in Philly.
Right.
They could not stay on the field. They went three and out in two of their three drives in the first quarter. In fact, they had four plays or fewer in their first four drives and in five of their first six drives all in the first half. They had one drive where they sustained more than 2 minutes and 12 seconds of game time. So that is an easy pass in your windshield, as I like to say. That is the HOV lane to the end of the game and your defense getting gassed. So you absolutely have to find a way to stay on the field. I think Lattimore will make an impact in this game. I think this is kind of why you went and got him. I don't know. Do they travel him with A.J. Brown? Probably not. Seemed to me like what they wanted to do last week was they put him on the right. They told him to stay on the right. Whoever's over there, don't let him catch the football. And he kind of shut half of a field down. That's okay, too.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that.
It all helps.
I would probably like to see him travel. I mean, the last time he played against the Eagles and A.J. Brown, he had a pick six. I'd like to see that matchup just because, to me, that's good on good. We were told by everyone in New Orleans when they acquired him, this guy gets up for those matchups against the elite receivers. All right, well, let's let him get up for one.
Yeah, let's see it, right? What better matchup? I also wanted to ask the caller about what it was like to play for the Nationals in 08 and 09 and hit 250 with 13 homers, but that's beside the point. Looking at his other point, though, about kind of that cascading effect when it comes to Lattimore, I think we talk about that as it relates to, what defenses you can call, how aggressive other guys can be. I think that's such a huge factor, again, in terms of the pass game. But to me, it's about the running game. Maybe people have viewed this as an excuse, but I feel like they've been so concerned all year long with the most terrifying thing to us is one of our cornerbacks alone on an island against, an A.J. Brown, right? Like, see Emmanuel Forbes last year or something to that effect. And I think they've had to call very conservative defenses against decent offenses just to allow things to happen. So I think some of those gashes in the run game and some of the stuff that's been readily available underneath, I think now you can ramp up your aggressiveness. You can bet big on an early down run. You can bet big on a certain kind of route combination developing and maybe jump something. I think you can't do what Dan Quinn and Joe would have wanted to do over the years, which is turn you over without being aggressive. They've been very passive until now, and I think maybe this now kind of kickstart that.
All right, Danny, let's look at some of the other NFL matchups for this weekend. We've been mentioning throughout the week's worth of shows that this is one of those now late season doubleheader days in the NFL where you get both Saturday and Sunday games. There are two great games tomorrow. On Saturday, you get the Texans at 9-5 and the Chiefs 13-1. Sounds like Patrick Mahomes is a go. Shocker, he almost tore everything in his knee, but he'll limp around and be okay. Guy's got Gumby legs. I don't know if he has ligaments. It seems like he always almost gets seriously hurt, but never actually does. So good for him in Kansas City dodging a bullet. That game kicks off tomorrow at 1:00. And then the second game of two in the NFL on Saturday is an AFC North classic. The Steelers and the Ravens. This is a line of about 6.5 points.
Big.
Baltimore favored over Pittsburgh. I don't really understand that line. I'm taking Mike Tomlin, Pittsburgh, +6.5 every time.
Yeah, I mean, this is maybe one of those, okay, the world's kind of finding out here about Pittsburgh. They're not that good. And I haven't seen the update on George Pickens. I don't know if he's out, but when he's not playing, they're different. And you hate for it to come down there. But maybe that's the case. Again, I'm just looking for an explanation for why the line's that big. Look at the Texans and Chiefs, for example. 3.5-point dogs, Houston on the road. That makes sense to me. Divisional matchup like this, you'd go, wouldn't you expect this to be a close game? Given, I don't know, every time they ever play, it's always a close game. But here we are with that giant spread this week in favor of Baltimore or Horn.
George Pickens in the offense. Steelers ranked third in total offense. When he's not playing, they're ranked 32nd. This season,
there
just to give you an idea of all it takes is one deep threat to open things up a little bit for Pittsburgh. Elsewhere, NFC imports. The Rams have to hold serve against the Jets. They're playing in the Meadowlands. That's a 1:00 game, so that's 10:00 their time. That can be tricky late season. Right in front of the holidays, that's a 1:00 kick. The other game that matters a lot to Washington out of the NFC West, the Seahawks host the Vikings at 4:05. That matters because if Seattle were to lose, it only better positions the Commanders to hang on to that wild card spot, even if they lose to the Eagles.
Yeah, both the teams that are chasing them, Rams and Seahawks, if Washington gets a win and both of those teams lose before playing each other, those squads are pretty much eliminated and Washington is all but in.
Some of our favorite matchups of the weekend. We'll go through the full slate a little bit later today on Grant and Danny. But speaking of the NFL, we'll dive deep into the playoff picture on both sides of the ledger in both conferences with Trey Wingo, longtime ESPN NFL Live host. We will have him on the program next. We're live at the Crystal City Sports Pub for a Friday field trip. It's Grant and Danny on the Fan.